Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. It is a marvelous, magnificent, miraculous day to be alive. This is August 20th, 2012. My name is Paul Hutchings. I'm dialing in from beautiful Southeast Idaho. This is the Think and Grow Rich call, folks. This is a call that we come together each morning as entrepreneurs, as lovers of life all throughout the United States of America and internationally. To get our day started off right, to get those ideas and those principles and those laws moving in our minds so that we can move forward in a better way to have more, be more, do more in life, have more success, have more happiness, have more wealth, have more wisdom. This is the call that brings it all together. And I do want to welcome you, my friends. I am so excited about the content we're going to be covering today. You know, on this call, we've been doing this call for over 2 years now, every morning, Monday through Friday, and we've really studied three foundational books. These three books I like to call the trifecta because, in my opinion, they contain the complete picture of what's necessary to have success in one's business. To have success financially, and the books are Think and Grow Rich by Dr. Napoleon Hill, The Science of Getting Rich by Wallace Wattles, and the third book that we're going to touch in today, we're not going to go through the whole book, but we're going to touch in it because it really does contain some puzzle pieces that if we don't have, we'll really have an incomplete puzzle and we won't be able to put it all together. And this third book is called Psycho-Cybernetics by Maxwell Maltz. And in case you don't have a copy, I do recommend you pick up a hard copy because, again, this is one of the books you will want to have in your library. But for now, if you go to my blog at paulhutchings.net and click on Mindset at the top, you should be able to download an ebook copy that will help you to follow along as we dip into this here over the next couple of days. And, again, this book really does help us complete the picture because the Think and Grow Rich really lays out the laws of success, the principles, what's necessary, that you know, the mechanics to go through and have success in your business. The Science of Getting Rich helps us to delve into our beliefs about money and destroy limiting false beliefs. It helps us to evaluate those beliefs so that we can put them in alignment with reality and in alignment with where we want to go. And by the way, if we have those incorrect beliefs about money, we can strive to apply the principles of Think and Grow Rich, but we'll be held back subconsciously because we'll be self-sabotaging ourselves because of those beliefs we have about money. This book, Psycho-Cybernetics by Maxwell Maltz, helps us to further understand some foundational and pivotal beliefs that will either enable us to put all of these puzzle pieces together or hold us back, because this book helps us to understand and analyze the beliefs that we have about ourselves. It helps us to understand what the self-image is and how it can literally handicap us in a major way or empower us in a major way. So again, this is the completion of the trifecta. I'm excited to go through this beginning introductory chapter this morning, and also excited to hear the discussion afterward. You know, again, this is one of those books that could make all the difference. It can allow you to have a major, major breakthrough. These principles that we're going to be covering this morning, one of those principles that literally is like flipping on a light switch. And if you haven't been exposed to these principles before, I promise you, can change literally everything for you. So pay close attention. Maybe have out a notepad, something to jot some notes down with, so that you can write down those lines that stick out to you. And again, excited for the discussion. So let's jump into this. We're going to go through the preface, which is the secret of using this book to change your life. Discovery of the self-image represents a breakthrough in psychology and the field of creative personality. The significance of the self-image has been recognized for more than a decade, yet there has been little written about it. Curiously enough, this is not because self-image psychology has not worked, but because it has worked so amazingly well. As one of my colleagues expressed it, I am reluctant to publish my findings, especially for the lay public, because if I presented some of my case histories and described the rather amazing and spectacular improvements in personality, I would be accused of exaggerating or trying to start a cult or both. I, too, felt the same sort of reluctance. Any book I might write on the subject would be sure to be regarded as somewhat unorthodox by some of my colleagues for several reasons. In the first place, it is somewhat unorthodox for a plastic surgeon to write a book on psychology. In the second place, it will probably be regarded in some quarters as even more unorthodox to go outside the tight little dogma, the closed system of the science of psychology, and seek answers concerning human behavior in the fields of physics, anatomy, and the new science of cybernetics. My answer is that any good plastic surgeon is and must be a psychologist, whether he would have it so or not. When you change a man's face, you almost invariably change his future. Change his physical image, and nearly always you change the man, his personality, his behavior, and sometimes even his basic talents and abilities. Beauty is more than skin deep. A plastic surgeon does not simply alter a man's face, he alters the man's inner self. The incisions he makes are more than skin deep. They frequently cut deep into the psyche as well. I decided a long time ago that this is an awesome responsibility and that I owe it to my patients and to myself to know something about what I am doing. No responsible MD would attempt to perform extensive plastic surgery without specialized knowledge and training. Just so, I feel that if changing a man's face is going to change the inner man as well, I have a responsibility to acquire specialized knowledge in that field also. Failures that led to success. In a previous book written some 20 years ago, New Faces, New Futures, I published a more or less collection of case histories where plastic surgery, and particularly facial plastic surgery, had opened the door to a new life for many people. That book told of the amazing changes that often occur quite suddenly and dramatically in a person's personality when you change his face. I was elated at my successes in this respect, but like Sir Humphrey Davy, I learned more from my failures than from my successes. Some patients showed no change in personality after surgery. In most cases, a person who had a conspicuously ugly face or some freakish feature corrected by surgery experienced an almost immediate, usually within 21 days, rise in self-esteem, self-confidence. But in some cases, the patient continued to feel inadequate and experienced feelings of inferiority. In short, these failures continued to feel, act, and behave just as if they still had an ugly face. This indicated to me that reconstruction of the physical image itself was not the real key to changes in personality. There was something else which was usually influenced by facial surgery, but sometimes not. When this something else was reconstructed, the person himself changed. When this something else was not reconstructed, the person himself remained the same, although his physical features might be radically different. The face of personality. It was as if personality itself had a face. This non-physical face of personality seemed to be the real key to personality change. If it remained scarred, distorted, ugly, or inferior, the person himself acted out this role in his behavior regardless of the changes in physical appearance. If this face of personality could be reconstructed, if old emotional scars could be removed, then the person himself changed, even without facial plastic surgery. Once I began to explore this area, I found more and more phenomena which confirmed the fact that the self-image, the individual's mental and spiritual concept or picture of himself, was the real key to personality and behavior. More about this in the first chapter. Truth is where you find it. I have always believed in going wherever it may be necessary to find truth, even if international boundaries must be crossed. When I decided to become a plastic surgeon years ago, German doctors were far ahead of the rest of the world in this field, so I went to Germany. In my search for the self-image, I also had to cross boundaries, although invisible ones. Although the science of psychology acknowledged the self-image and its key role in human behavior, psychology's answer to the questions of how the self-image exerts its influence how it creates a new personality, what happens inside the human nervous system when the self-image is changed, was somehow. I found most of my answers in the new science of cybernetics, which restored teleology as a respectable concept in science. It is rather strange that the new science of cybernetics grew out of the work of physicists and mathematicians rather than that of psychologists, especially when it is understood that cybernetics has to do with teleology, goal striving, goal-oriented behavior of mechanical systems. Cybernetics explains what happens and what is necessary in the purposeful behavior of machines. Psychology, with all its vaunted knowledge of the human psyche, had no satisfactory answer for such a simple, goal-oriented, purposeful situation. For example, how it is possible for a human being to pick up a pen from a coffee table and place it, pick up a cigarette from a coffee table and place it in his mouth. But the physicist had an answer. The proponents of many psychological theories were somewhat comparable to men who speculated as to what was in outer space on other planets, but could not tell what was in their own backyards. The new science of cybernetics made possible an important breakthrough in psychology. I myself take no credit for the breakthrough other than the recognition of it. The fact that this breakthrough came from the work of physicists and mathematicians should not surprise us. Any breakthrough in science is likely to come from outside the system. Experts are the most thoroughly familiar with the developed knowledge inside the prescribed boundaries of a given science. Any new knowledge must usually come from the outside, not from experts, but from what someone has defined as an invert. Pasteur was not an MD. The Wright brothers were not aeronautical engineers, but bicycle mechanics. Einstein, properly speaking, was not a physicist, but a mathematician. Yet his findings in mathematics completely turned upside down all the pet theories in physics. Madame Curie was not an MD, but a physicist. Yet she made important contributions to medical science. How you can use this new knowledge. In this book, I have attempted not only to inform you of this new knowledge from the field of cybernetics, but also to demonstrate how you can use it in your own life to achieve goals that are important to you. General principles. The self-image is the key to human personality and human behavior. Change the self-image and you change the personality and the behavior. But more than this, the self-image sets the boundaries of individual accomplishment. It defines what you can and cannot do. Expand the self-image and you expand the area of the possible. The development of an adequate, realistic self-image will seem to imbue the individual with new capabilities, new talents, and literally turn failure into success. Self-image psychology has not only been proved on its own merits, but it explains many phenomena which have long been known but not properly understood in the past. For example, there is today irrefutable clinical evidence in the fields of individual psychology, psychosomatic medicine, and industrial psychology that there are success-type personalities and failure-type personalities, happiness-prone personalities and unhappiness-prone personalities, and health-prone personalities and disease-prone personalities. Self-image psychology throws new light on these and many other observable facts of life. It throws new light on the power of positive thinking, and more importantly, explains why it works with some individuals and not with others. Positive thinking does indeed work when it is consistent with the individual's self-image. It literally cannot work when it is inconsistent with the self-image, until the self-image itself has been changed. In order to understand self-image psychology and use it in your own life, you need to know something of the mechanism it employs to accomplish its goal. There is an abundance of scientific evidence which shows that the human brain and nervous system operate purposefully in accordance with the known principles of cybernetics to accomplish goals of the individual. Insofar as function is concerned, the brain and nervous system constitute a marvelous and complex goal-striving mechanism. a sort of built-in automatic guidance system which works for you as a success mechanism or against you as a failure mechanism, depending upon how you, the operator, operate it and the goals you set for it. It is also rather ironic that cybernetics, which began as a study of machines and mechanical principles, goes far to restore the dignity of man as a unique creative being. Psychology, which began with the study of man's psyche or soul, almost ended by depriving man of his soul. The behaviorist who understood neither the man nor his machine and thereby confused the one with the other told us that thought is merely the movement of electrons and consciousness merely a chemical action. Will and purpose were myths. Cybernetics, which began with the study of mechanical machines, makes no such mistake. The science of cybernetics does not tell us that man is a machine, but that man has and uses a machine. Moreover, it tells us how that machine functions and how it can be used. Experiencing is the secret. The self-image is changed, for better or worse, not by intellect alone, nor by intellectual knowledge alone, but by experiencing. Wittingly or unwittingly, you develop your self-image by your creative experiencing in the past. You can change it by the same method. It is not the child who is taught about love, but the child who has experienced love that grows into a healthy, happy, well-adjusted adult. Our present state of self-confidence and poise is the result of what we have experienced rather than what we have learned intellectually. Self-image psychology also bridges the gap and resolves apparent conflicts between the various therapeutic methods used today. It furnishes a common denominator for direct and indirect counseling, clinical psychology, psychoanalysis, and even autosuggestion. All in one way or another use creative experiencing to build a better self-image. Regardless of theories, this is what really happens. For example, in the therapeutic situation employed by the psychoanalytical school, the analyst never criticizes, disapproves, or moralizes, is never shocked as the patient pours out his fears, his shames, his guilt feelings, and his bad thoughts. For perhaps the first time in his life, the patient experiences acceptance as a human being. He feels that his self has some worth and dignity, and he comes to accept himself and to conceive of his self in new terms. Science discovers the synthetic experience. Another discovery, this time in the field of experimental and clinical psychology, enables us to use experiencing as a direct and controlled method of changing the self-image. Actual, real-life experience can be a hard and ruthless teacher. Throw a man in water over his head, and the experience may teach him to swim. The same experience may cause another man to drown. The army makes many a man out of many young boys, but there is no doubting that the army experience also makes many psychoneurotics. For centuries, it has been recognized that nothing succeeds like success. We learn to function successfully by experiencing success. We learn to function success. Memories of past successes act as built-in stored information which give us self-confidence for the present task. But how can a person draw upon memories of past successful experiences when he has experienced only failure? His plight is somewhat comparable to the young man who cannot secure a job because he has no experience and cannot acquire experience because he cannot get a job. This dilemma was solved by another important discovery, which for all practical purposes allows us to synthesize experience, to literally create experience and control it in the laboratory of our minds. Experimental and clinical psychologists have proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that the human nervous system cannot tell the difference between an actual experience and an experience imagined vividly and in detail. Although this may appear to be a rather extravagant statement, in this book we will examine some controlled laboratory experiments where this type of synthetic experience has been used in very practical ways to improve skill in dart throwing and shooting basketball goals. We will see it work in the lives of individuals who have used it to improve their skill in public speaking, overcome fear of the dentist, develop social poise, develop self-confidence, sell more goods, become more proficient in chess, and in practically every other conceivable type of situation where experience is recognized to bring success. We will take a look at an amazing experiment in which two prominent doctors arranged things so that neurotics could experience normally and thereby cured them. Perhaps most important of all, we will learn how chronically unhappy people have learned to enjoy life by experiencing happiness. The secret of using this book to change your life. This book has been designed not merely to be read, but to be experienced. You can acquire information from reading a book, but to experience, you must creatively respond to information. Acquiring information itself is passive. Experiencing is active. When you experience, something happens inside your nervous system and your midbrain. New engrams and neural patterns are recorded in the gray matter of your brain. This book has been designed to force you literally to experience. Tailor-made prefabricated case histories have been kept intentionally to a minimum. Instead, you are asked to furnish your own case histories by exercising imagination and memory. I have not supplied summaries at the end of each chapter. Instead, you are asked to jot down the most important points which appeal to you as key points which should be remembered. You will digest the information in this book better if you do your own analysis and summaries and summation of the chapters. Finally, you will find throughout the book certain things to do and certain practice exercises which you are asked to perform. These exercises are simple and easy to perform, but they must be done regularly if you are to derive maximum benefit from them. Reserve judgment for 21 days. Do not allow yourself to become discouraged if nothing seems to happen when you set about practicing the various techniques outlined in this book for changing your self-image. Instead, reserve judgment and go on practicing for a minimum period of 21 days. It usually requires a minimum of about 21 days to effect any perceptible change in a mental image. Following plastic surgery, it takes about 21 days for the average patient to get used to his new face. When an arm or leg is amputated, the phantom limb persists for about 21 days. People must live in a new house for about 3 weeks before it begins to seem like home. These and many other commonly observed phenomena tend to show that it requires a minimum of about 21 days for an old mental image to dissolve and a new one to gel. Therefore, you will derive more benefit from this book if you will secure your own consent to reserve critical judgment for at least 3 weeks. During this time, do not be continually looking over your shoulder, so to speak, or trying to measure your progress. During these 21 days, do not argue intellectually with the ideas presented. Do not debate with yourself as to whether they will work or not. Perform the exercises even if they seem impractical to you. Persist in playing your new role and thinking of yourself in new terms, even if you seem to yourself to be somewhat hypocritical in doing so, and even if the new self-image feels a little uncomfortable or unnatural. You can neither prove nor disprove with intellectual argument the ideas and concepts described in this book, or simply by talking about them. You can prove them to yourself by doing them and judging results for yourself. I am only asking that you reserve critical judgment and analytical argument for 21 days so that you will give yourself a fair chance to prove or disprove their validity in your own life. The building of an adequate self-image is something that should continue throughout a lifetime. Admittedly, you cannot accomplish a lifetime of growth in 3 weeks' time, but you can experience improvement within 3 weeks' time, and sometimes the improvement is quite dramatic. And finally, what is success? Since I use the word success and successful throughout this book, I think it is important at the outset that I define those terms. As I use it, success has nothing to do with prestige symbols, but with creative accomplishment. Rightly speaking, no man should attempt to be a success, but every man can and should attempt to be successful. Trying to be a success in terms of acquiring prestige symbols and wearing certain badges leads to neuroticism and frustration and unhappiness. Striving to be successful brings not only material success, but satisfaction, fulfillment, and happiness. Noah Webster defines success as the satisfactory accomplishment of a goal sought for. Creative striving for a goal that is important to you as a result of your own deep felt needs, aspirations, and talents, and not the symbols which the Joneses expect you to display, brings happiness as well as success because you will be functioning as you were meant to function. Man is by nature a goal-striving being, and because man is built that way, he is not happy unless he is functioning as he was made to function as a goal striver. Thus, true success and true happiness not only go together, but each enhances the other. And, my friends, I know that was a lot of information to cover here as we start this study of this book, Psycho-Cybernetics. But it was important because it really lays down some of the scope of what we're going to be talking about and introduces some of the key, pivotal, life-changing ideas and truths that will allow us literally to change everything. So I'm excited to hear your thoughts. Most incredible pieces of information. So let me open up the lines here and we'll jump into the mastermind portion of the call. Star 6 to unmute your line.
Morning, Paul.
Morning.
This is Bill Lynch.
Hey, Bill. Good morning.
Good morning, Paul. Listen, you're right. There's so much information in this preface. A couple of points. Number one, whenever I hear about the 21-day experiment, I think about Earl Nightingale's Lead the Field program. And he said probably the best thing to start something like that off is to treat everyone with whom you come in contact as the most important person in your life. And he says if you do that for 21 days, you'll notice drastic changes of things taking place all around you. Second of all, I think we see today, especially plastic surgery and the effects it's had. I mean, look at the celebrities. It used to be, let's have a face tuck and let's pick up a few wrinkles here. But now it's coming to the point where they can't adjust to, as they're getting older and their success isn't quite the way it used to be. It's like Barry Manilow just had plastic surgery done. And he looks like a walking zombie. He looks absolutely horrible. And I think probably the best case, though, is the most sad case was Michael Jackson. He could never, ever adjust to the fact that he wanted to be white, and he just kept getting surgery after surgery, and he would never come to grips with himself as who he was. He was so famous, he had so much talent, but he could never, ever adjust to the fact that he kept to the point where, I mean, I think this is one of the big reasons why he turned to drugs. You know, he could never, ever accept himself for who he was. It was really a shame because here's somebody who really contributed so much to music, and yet again, he could never really accept himself. So there's so many examples around us today of all these things, and this book is really, really incredible. I read it so many years ago, but these principles apply even more today than when this book was written. Back to you, Paul.
Thank you, Bill. Great, great points. I appreciate those thoughts.
Hey, Paul.
Yes, good morning, Melvin.
What he had to say just now was right on the button, and I agree with it. And I also want to say you didn't leave too much room for people to say anything here. I mean, you covered it all. It's just in how you presented it. It's an extraordinary book. It really is. Anyone that hasn't had a chance to read it, I suggest they do so. It is so powerful. It really helps you truly understand yourself. Speaking about being the key, it truly is a foundation. Everything's going to be built on that. And kind of like one of the things I've been trying to say about, riches and making money and how powerful money is, and getting the point across that, no, it is not the most important thing. And I think the gentleman who just spoke points that out. When it comes to who could have more fame, be more known, have more money, or than someone like Elvis Presley or Michael Jackson. And in both cases, they neither one of them got this particular portion in place. Neither one of them did the work in-house. And that's what we all have to do. We have to go in and do the work within house. Now, some of our houses are just a lot more dirty and messed up than others, but we all have to go with, from within, do the work within house, and create what we choose to really want and be. Because there's so much junk in there that is of not of our own doing, that we just bought into and accepted, and that's that we have to really give some thought to. This book will really help you do that. It's an extraordinary book. I've got to just say that again. So you're going to love going through this one. Back to you, Paul.
Thank you, Melvin. Excellent insights as always. Appreciate that. Star 6, who's next?
Hey, Paul, it's Deborah.
Hey, good morning, Deborah.
Hey, you know, yeah, this book really speaks to me as a mom who stays home with a 1- and a 3-year-old, and I've got my 15-year-old, of course. You know, I get up most mornings and start my day around 5, but I start my day at the computer. So then this call comes, and I'm still, you know, at the computer or sitting somewhere in the house enjoying the call, and my kids wake up just at the tail end of the call. So what happens to me is sometimes I get stuck in the rut where I haven't got myself ready for the day. So I'm home, I'm in my PJs, you know, maybe I put on some shorts. Now it's time to run errands. So now I'm running errands in my shorts, don't have makeup on yet, haven't done my hair. I'm not comfortable talking to people about my business when I don't look professional, even though, you know, I absolutely do when I have my kids in tow. You know, if there's an opportunity to speak to somebody, I do. However, not when I look, not when I don't look the part. So when I've done that, when I haven't given myself time to get ready, my confidence level is low enough to where I won't approach anybody. You know, I won't talk to anybody, and I'm wasting valuable time as I'm running my errands and doing my thing. I could be talking to lots of people. I could be leaving business cards. I could be you know, I can be giving people my cards, but I don't because of my confidence level is low when I haven't got up and got myself ready. So that's just, you know, I think because I'm home with the little kids, I use that as an excuse that I can just kind of, you know, I'm just going to be home with the kids today. What use is it? Why should I get myself going? You know, it's important for especially for women to, you know, get up that extra 20 minutes early, get yourself going, get yourself dressed, get ready for your day before your day begins. It will, you'll meet twice as many people, if not more, throughout the day if you can do that. And I'm a prime example of that. So back to you.
Deborah, that is really some amazing insight that you just shared with us just now. And I've got to share with everyone on the call something that kind of goes along the lines with what Deborah said. You know, I work from home just like many of us do on the call, and I do a lot of my work from my home office over the phone, so I'm not going out and seeing people. And along the lines of my growth process here growing up, I've come to the conclusion that clothes don't really matter much to me. You know, like I don't go out and spend a lot of money on clothes. I mean, I'll wear t-shirts and shorts and I've said to myself, you know, clothes really aren't that important. We went to our company convention here a few weeks ago, and I went out and did some shopping for this company convention, and I bought some new clothes. And last night we went out to visit my in-laws, and I wore the shirt that I bought that was new, and I wore the new pants, and I noticed that I felt good. I felt like, well, you know, I feel like I'm, you know, I'm dressed well, and I kind of feel good about myself. I realized that if how we dress is having a negative or a positive impact on how we see ourselves, then how we dress is incredibly important. Now, it's not important for, you know, what other people think. I don't think dressing well is important for, you know, impressing other people, but how do we see ourselves? If when we dress well, we have a little bit more confidence, like, you know, like Deborah, if she, like Deborah says, she gets up and gets ready for the day. If she has more confidence and sees herself in a better light, then absolutely it's important to get ready for the day and dress well. If you can see yourself in a great light, you know, with dressing in shorts and a t-shirt, then maybe not so important. But it's that self-image. It's how we see ourselves. Great insight. Thanks for Star 6, who's next?
Hi, Paul. This is Frank from Delaware.
Hey, Frank. Good morning.
Good morning. I just want, as you were reading that forward this morning, I recalled a scripture that it came to mind, and I'll paraphrase it. It says, "Do not look at the person in the mirror and then walk away and forget what you saw." And that's really what it seems like this book is going to really help us out with. What can we look at the man in the mirror and not even want to forget that person? Are we the person that we want to be? Do we display the personality traits that we want of ourselves? Or are we the person that goes to the mirror, does this self-analysis, and then walks away from the mirror and forgets completely the man that he was looking at? And so I'm looking forward to hearing more of this book and helping me to get my self-image to a place where I do not forget the person that I saw in the mirror, and I won't want to forget him. Thank you very much, Paul. Back to you.
Thank you, Frank. Great, great comment. Star 6, who's next? I know we got a lot of people.
Good morning, my friends. Paul, Mr. Hutchins, how are you?
Excellent, Mr. Martin. Thanks for
my
asking.
My friend, we need not read any further in this book. That prophet says it all. I mean, really and truly, you cannot go higher than you see yourself. It starts with you. It starts with us, the individual. You know, what is most interesting about it all is when you take your eye off yourself and put it on somebody else, everything takes shape. It's incredible what you do for others, you do for yourself. That selflessness is really, it comes back to this whole thing. It's really interesting. I like to talk about Mother Teresa because I think that even the sharpest of mind don't get it. And when I say this about Mother Teresa, without perhaps not even being known to her, was probably the most selfish person on earth, because the joy that she got out of serving others without even looking for a return, she was getting more energy than perhaps anybody living today. You take your eye off yourself and you put it on others. You forget yourself. You lose yourself in action, and you wither in despair. Helping others, serving others, that's where your life is going to come. What we're doing on this call, that's why people look forward to this call. Because the very 1 hour on this call could well be even more glorious than the entire day for most people that are working. That experience that you gain from this call. I remember, Paul, when we started, when I got on this call, I remember there was probably about about 17 people in the group, about 5 people on average would be on the call. And I remember I told you after a month, it'll be by October, there'll be over 1,000 people on this call. I think we're in line to get that. But the idea that anybody can be responsible for you other than yourself is insanity. I challenge Einstein on this one. That's the insanity. You see, because you cannot go higher than you see yourself. You know, you take a look at how the water flows and it goes around things that it can't go through. It goes around or over or under, whatever it needs to do to get to where it wants to go. It makes a way. It finds a way. It keeps on keeping on. And if you're not growing, you're dying. It's instinctive why we're always looking to grow, because we know that we will implode as a human being, as a society, as a collective order, that we will cease to exist like dinosaurs. If we're not growing, we always have to grow. Without even you really even want to do it, you know that you have to grow. You know, we talked about celebrities on here. You think about this. Think of a speaker. When it's low, you can barely hear the imperfections. And when you amplify it, wow. You hear all the noise, the chatter. You hear everything so loud and clear. That's what money do to people. You will get more of who you are. That's all it is. If you're not happy today within yourself, don't expect money to do it. I just want to let you know this because, hey, it is the fact. It's all around you. So be happy that you got up this morning. Count your blessings. Count all your blessings, not your troubles. Everybody knows what to do, really and truly. It's your habit. Every day, what's your habit? It's really your habit. I think it was Socrates who said, we are what we repeatedly do. Therefore, excellence is not an act, but a habit. That's what it is. What do you want amplified? Focus on that, and you're going to get what you want. Right back to you, Paul. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rick.
Day.
You do the same, my friend. Appreciate those thoughts. Star 6, who's next?
Good morning, guys. Good morning. This is John Chapman. I don't know who asked again. But first of all, let me just say thank you for bringing this book up, Paul. It's pretty fantastic. Secondly, as to what Mitch Martin was saying, you really cannot out-earn your self-development. I see it time and time again. Folks, they gave a little bit of money, 10, 15, and 20 came up. And it's like water flowing right through their fingers. Maybe they get into an opportunity that allows to create some quick cash. But literally, just as fast as they are creating that cash flow, their self-development, their internal thermostat tells them that they're broke. And because their mind, their inner self, has a broke mentality, they will do everything and anything to get that money out of their pocket as soon as possible. Whether it be to invest in first things, just party it right away, whatever it is, it's gone. It's 100% gone. So that is my first point. My second point, as it pertains to the nature of success, you look down in the networking industry and you see some people that are really happy and you see some people that are not happy. And what really amazed me is that you can have a person who's doing the 20K a month, whose goal, whose vision of success is to be the person speaking from stage, is to be the person having the calls, is to be, quote unquote, the man or the woman, who isn't happy, whose whole purpose is recognition, whose whole purpose is how much can I do for me and how much can you say good about me? And then there's the person who comes to the industry or who develops a servant leader's heart, who really and truly cares about the success of the people that they work with. Whether they're earning $100 a day, $150 a day, whatever amount, it really doesn't matter. But the very simple fact that they are able to serve and that they are able to lead and that they are able to give back, that in and of itself is the true source of their happiness. And you can always tell when you're actually individual person, whether or not they have that underlying motive, I'm not speaking to you to defend you. I'm not speaking to you to give value. I'm not speaking to you to develop a true friendship and a true relationship. I'm speaking to you in order to recruit you into, quote unquote, my deal. When you can flip that conversation within your head and really, really be 100% okay and be joyous and have a joyful attitude, have a joyful outlook in regards to your relationships with others and how you present your business and how you go about building your business, then you realize, just like you were saying earlier, Paul, that it's really not about the clothes that you're wearing. It's really about, A, the value that you bring to the table, one, and how you can bless the other people's lives. Just, I know that for myself, on a personal basis, when I wear a shirt and tie, when it comes to business types of situations, because I had so much failure within my past networking experience when I was doing offline and network marketing, I have a negative association with that. It doesn't make me feel good. I don't feel good. As opposed to, because now that I build online and just like you, I don't really care about what I wear. When I'm comfortable, and when I'm just comfortable, whether it be shorts and a shirt, and I don't focus in on me, and I just focus in on what the value that I'm bringing, that's when my happiness comes out. And when I'm happy, I know that I'm connecting. So those are just some thoughts to think about.
Excellent thoughts, John, and really appreciate you, relating what we're talking about to the home business industry, which many of us are, you know, endeavoring and laboring in. Great thoughts. Thank you, my friend. Star 6, who's next?
Hi, Paul.
Hi.
Good morning.
Usha. Good morning.
Can you hear me clearly?
Yes, very clearly.
Okay, great. I was just, I just wanted to share my thoughts as you were reading the book. We are actually talking about self-image, so the real question should be, who am I? You know, who is this self? And most of the time the problem comes up when you think you're the body or you're the mind. And when you start inquiring through this way, like Ramana Maharshi did, I don't know if you have heard of him, but he was one of the great sages of India, who always asked, directed, when anybody would go and ask him any question, he would direct them to that question, who am I? Who is speaking it? You know? So when you start identifying yourself with the body and the body starts degenerating, then you're going to have problems because that's what you think you are. And we do the same thing with our mind. We think we are the mind. And the mind is nothing but a bundle of thoughts. You empty the mind of thoughts, then you come to the real core of your essence. And your essence is really consciousness. And a lot of people, including myself, I never understood what it meant to say that you are pure consciousness. And that's your true essence. True consciousness is really awareness, pure awareness. And when I say pure awareness, awareness of yourself without these identifications with the body and mind. But even though we know that we are not the body, it is important to keep the body clean and beautiful because it makes you feel good. And just like a car, you know, it's just a vehicle. That gives you the experiences that you desire. And if it is like a vehicle, then you need to keep it good, in good condition, so that it gives you better mileage. What is the point in not treating the body properly and having to live long but in a poor quality of life? So I really think when we start delving into that kind of an investigation of who am I, then we will get the proper self-image. And when you realize that you're pure consciousness, and when you actually sit down and do the meditation, detaching yourself from the body concept or the mind concept, you know, where you have these emotions, good and bad emotions, when you detach yourself from all those things, that's when you actually experience true happiness. And he also gave an example of the arm being amputated and, you know, you're still feeling the arm. So again, when you start analyzing the body in its three concepts of body, mind, and intellect, or the physical, the astral, what is the third level? I forget. Anyway, there's a third level, and when you have, in order to reach that third level, you need to cross, you need to analyze these two, the physical and the astral. So anyway, this is a very, very deep subject that I'm trying to get into in such a short period of time, so I think I'll stop right here. Thank you, and back to you, Paul.
Usha, thank you for sharing very profound thoughts and very worthy, extremely worthy of pondering. Thank you. Star 6, who's next? I know we have a lot of people that want to come out.
Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Liz.
Okay, you hear me?
Yes, yep, loud and clear.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, great, great. I just wanted to add a personal story as far as self-image and how that can affect us on so many different levels. As a child, I grew up the earlier, maybe around the ages of 8, 9, 10, all the way up till probably about 14. I was a very, very unhappy little girl. And not because I came from a bad home or something where my household was in turmoil. I came from a good, very good family, loving home and environment. But my self-image of myself was not all that great. And, of course, as you know, as kids, a lot of times children tend to be very cruel to one another. And in elementary school, I allowed other children to convince me that there was nothing worthy of me and nothing beautiful about me, nothing pretty about me. So prior to being abused by the kids in school, I really did think highly of myself. But over a course of years, probably between 5th grade and 8th grade, the kids would tell me that I had a very large nose. And as a young little girl, I had acne, so they used to call me pizza face. And they used to call me fat. And they had this club, and they called themselves the PYTs, the Pretty Young Things, and I was not allowed to be in there. So I suffered a great deal of depression. I only had one friend in elementary school, still my best friend today. But I say that to say that my mother told me, you know, LaVie, you are beautiful. There's nothing wrong with you. And she used to implant certain things in me that I didn't quite believe because I was hearing more of that from the outside than I was getting from the inside. So when I went into high school, I was still the little eighth grader from having the glasses and the acne and being overweight and still had the same nose. But something changed. I started to realize when I got in high school there was a diverse crowd of people, and we all looked different, and we all had our different ways about us, but we were all special in our own way. And I lost the glasses, and I lost some weight, and I started thinking more highly of myself. And then things started to change. People started to flock to me. I felt more comfortable about myself, and then I couldn't imagine thinking the way that I used to think. And now as an adult, I'm still in that mindset that regardless of what someone else's opinion is of me, I think highly of myself. I love me before I love anything or anybody else, because if I don't project that self-love, how can anybody else love me? How can anybody else accept me? So I've learned to accept myself for whatever flaws I have, and guess what? My flaws are not flaws. My flaws are what makes me unique. If everybody looked the same, or if everybody had the same qualities, or if everybody had the same personality, this would be a very bland, basic planet, I think. There would be no fun to it. So I think that I add my contribution to the world being just as I am and being just who I am, and I wouldn't change anything about myself today. And I think that makes me a better businesswoman, because when I go out to speak to people about my business, I'm confident about who I am and what I have to contribute, not just to them but to the universe. So I think self-image is very important, because if you do not think highly of yourself, the game is over. You've just defeated yourself. You might as well just check in, because if you don't have that, you don't have the foundation to go forward. So that's all I want to add to the call.
Very powerful real-life example of how the self-image has played out in your life, Levy. Thank you so much for sharing that. Really appreciate it. Star 6, who's next?
Good morning, guys.
Good morning. Shall we let Sandy go first, Doc?
Absolutely. Go, Sandy.
Oh, Levy, you are one of the most beautiful people I have ever met, inside and out. You are amazing, girl, and thank you for sharing that. It reminded me of something so significant. My youngest daughter, when she was in elementary school, I thought she was a beautiful little girl, but it was a small elementary school in southern Mississippi. And she was picked on by a group of girls because she was very smart. She was a little bit overweight, but not a lot, to the point that she was so depressed that she never went out during recess. I found out later from the teacher that she was allowed to stay in and just read. And she would come home after school, and she would literally go to bed and sleep. And I did not know what was wrong with her. Teacher didn't say anything. I didn't know anything about it. And when I found out, I brought her home, and I homeschooled her. We moved away from there when she got into high school to the area we're in now, in a much bigger school. And, oh, my, what a difference. She got a whole different set of friends. She blossomed. She grew into this beautiful young woman that no one would have ever believed she would have become because of what she was going through at the time. She is now a nursing home administrator. She and her husband do triathlons, and she has so much self-confidence, but it left scars. And in saying that, it reminded me of my own self. Because I can remember just a few months ago going on a cruise with some of you guys, and my fear of how people would perceive me or think of me. And, you know, as you guys all know, I met the president at the time of the company, and he got me on a system for weight loss, inch loss. And the first time I was exposed on a corporate call with him that I was on the system, I literally freaked out. It scared me to death. I thought, oh, my goodness, I am outed now, because I felt like that people would really be looking to me to be successful in this journey and yet fearful that I would not be. And so as I went through that, I finally started really realizing that I was being successful. It built my self-confidence and realizing that it really was working, that this really did happen. And the confidence came not just with what I was doing, but from what other people said. And so it really helped me to start realizing I can do this. But then as we got ready to go to our trip to Vegas, I got on the plane with this short little flight between Chattanooga and Atlanta with 50-seater plane, and I sit down next to this woman, and some of you have heard the story, and as soon as I sat down, she started complaining, and she says, why in the world would they put two big women sitting together? They must know we're big. She says, I can't stand this. I'm just too crowded. I am just going to ask if I can move. Oh, my goodness, my heart sank. I texted my husband, and she did move. I texted my husband, and I said, oh, my goodness, this is not very good for my self-confidence going out to Vegas. Because guess what? My fear came back, and I thought, oh, my goodness, I'm going to get out there, and nobody's going to be able to see that I have changed, that I'm a different person. And so that fear came back. And so my husband said, honey, you're going to be fine. You can do this. So I get out there, and as you all know, what an amazing time it was and how wonderful all of you were to me. And I came back on the plane, and this is so surreal because I get this man sharing the seat with me on the way back from Atlanta, and it's this man in the suit. And so I strike a conversation with him like I do everybody, asking where he's from, you know, where he's coming from. And he tells me he's coming from Virginia. And I said, what took you to Virginia? Well, he said I was studying some things about some new plastic surgery techniques. Oh, my. Well, there we start about visual of what somebody looks like. And I said, so you're a plastic surgeon? No, I'm actually in the weight loss industry. Uh-oh. I thought. And as he's talking, I find out that he does all these weight loss surgeries. I'm like, oh, I said to him, before I even knew it, it came out of my mouth, oh, my word. I said, he says, well, you ask. And I said, that's fine. I said, it's nothing I'm going to do. And so it was just interesting at how I took the plane out and I get this woman who is complaining so much about sitting next to another big woman. And on the way back, I get this guy who is in the weight loss industry actually doing surgeries for people to lose weight. And how much those people do towards other people's self-images in how words inflict pain on others that dredge up old memories and things that they have. But when I heard from the doctor what he did, the difference was completely as different in night and day from the lady that I went out there with. Why? Because what happened out there in Vegas changed my life because it gave me confidence that I was on the right track, that I was being accepted by others. Why? Was it because I had changed so that people would like me more? No, it's because I found the right people who love me for the real me. That's the difference. And so, Levine, you have found the right people to love you for who you are. You're still the same person. You've just found the right people to love you, and we love you. So with that, back to you, Paul.
Beautiful thought, Sandy. And if I might add, the other key that happened is you gave yourself permission to see yourself as you really are, which is putting yourself in alignment with a more accurate description of your self-image. So it's not necessarily that, you know, having the right people in your life can definitely help, but it's us giving that permission that we're accepting what they're telling us, we're accepting the feelings, and all of that is a decision that happens within our own psyche, and that's really exciting that we hold the key. Doc, go ahead. I know we're running over a little bit, but go ahead, my friend. I'd love to hear from you.
Real quick, and that was Madam Natureline that just came out for us. So well done, Sandy. And I'm glad that you went first. That was beautiful to listen to. You know, the thing that I love about this and the key point in the chapter, and it's been so eloquently demonstrated right away by Bill Winch at the very beginning of the call, followed up by Mel and many others who've all spoken to the central takeaway from this chapter that I see, and that is the difference between success and successful. And eloquent examples of people who have had extraordinary, absolute overabundance of all of the trappings of success and yet destroyed themselves because of never having the sensation of being successful. And so the point here is that the trappings of success are the material signs and symbols, which are fun, and there's no doubt about it. There's nothing wrong with them. And they are fun to accumulate. They're fun to have. But never mistake them for what is the essential success in life, and that is the feeling of being successful. And many people, Mother Teresa is the classic example of an individual who had probably the antithesis of material success to a Michael Jackson. And yet that woman had the most incredible sense of being successful in life. And so the reality is success are the trappings. They're the trinkets. They're the toys. They're the symbols that we accumulate to allow ourselves to be and feel successful. But being successful is a state of mind. And that is the cornerstone of why this book is in this series, because all we're working on all the time is allowing ourselves to come to the consciousness that what we hold in our mind is what we manifest in our life. Back to you, Paul.
Wow, powerful, powerful thoughts, Doc. Thank you for sharing, and thanks to everyone for sharing. I know we have so many people that want to jump out because this truth resonates with people. And when we hear things that are true and we look throughout our own lives, we just have this natural tendency to just, you know, want to get out there and share. And I know we have a lot of people that didn't get to come out, come back tomorrow. You know, we're going to be in this book for a few days. So would love to hear from you if you didn't get a chance to share. And if you did share, thank you so much. I want to close out with a thought. Maxwell Maltz said in this preface that truth is where you find it. That's a powerful line because it indicates to me that truth is where we find it. It's scattered all throughout our lives, amongst the people that we meet, amongst the places that we go, amongst the books that we read. And, you know, there is a lot of truth, I believe, in the Bible. And I want to just share something from that book. There's a point in that book where, you know, the young man is asking Christ, what's the great commandments? And he shares the two great commandments. And the first great commandment is, he says, you should love the Lord thy God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first one. And then the second one is like unto it. And then here's what he says. He says, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. And what I see happening in a lot of cases is we forget that that little piece in there that says as thyself, love thy neighbor as thyself. What does that imply? It implies that we learn to love ourselves. Maxwell Maltz says the self-image, how we see ourselves, is the key to human personality and human behavior. Change the self-image and you change the personality and the behavior. But more than this, self-image sets the boundaries of individual accomplishment. It defines what you can and cannot do. Expand the self-image and you expand the area of the possible. How do you see yourself, my friend? How do you see yourself? Have you been trying to find success in your life, listening, you know, to the calls, reading the books, but for some reason you're maybe missing a few pieces? Well, how do you see yourself? Do you see yourself as a successful home business owner? Do you see yourself having success in the various aspects of your life? Or, you know, deep down, do you have a mental image of yourself as someone who is not successful? Or do you talk about yourself as someone who just, for some reason, is never able to, you know, hit the goals that you have? This is key, my friends, and I'm so excited we're jumping into this because literally this can be a major breakthrough for me, for you, for everyone on the call. Be here for the next few days as we, again, delve into the self-image, what it is, what our self-image of ourselves is, and how do we start to affect that image that we have of ourselves so that we can start having better results in our lives. Exciting stuff. Thanks for being here. Let's get out there and make it a great day. We'll see you back here tomorrow morning on the Think and Grow Rich call. Take care, everyone.